Hello and welcome to Wheelchair Fits, What You Bench, episode 31. And the first part, I talk about my favorite approach for breaking PRs, the ultimate, you know, max strength gaining approach. And then I get into talking about the NFL Conference Championships. It's the Bills and Chiefs this week, as well as the Packers in Tampa. I'm a Packer fan, so, you know, working on the nerves this week. But I talk a lot, and I also talk about my approach to betting the NFL in the playoffs in 2021, just kind of what I feel is a strong approach when you're looking at these games. I talk about the strength stuff about the first 6 minutes, and then I jump into the conference championship stuff if you just wanted to skip ahead to the conference championship about 6 minutes in. Thanks, and enjoy the show. All right, let's start with a training topic. I'm going to talk about my personal favorite approach to gaining strength or increasing your PR on a particular lift. So the gist is we start with, you know, you got to know your one rep max. So test out and figure out your one rep max for a specific lift. Let's, you know, say it's something like a bench press and it's 200 pounds or something clean and press, overhead press, you know, whatever the lift is, it's not as important. But identify your one rep max for that lift. And then in the subsequent workouts, you warm up. And then you load up the bar to 90 to 95% of max. Maybe start with 90% of max when you're first starting this, because this protocol will kind of beat you up a little bit. But so you'll maybe not go with 95% of max the first time. So in this case, you know, you would start with 180 pounds as opposed to 190 pounds going with the bench press example again. And there's really one of two ways to kind of go about this. You're going to set your clock for 5 minutes. And the goal is to get as many reps as you can in 5 minutes. Each rep is just, you know, a single rep. So you do a rep, you rest, you do a rep, you rest, and go with that approach. So one rep at a time, how many reps can you get in 5 minutes? Now, the first time you do this, you really just kind of can go with the rest period on you know, every minute on the minute, and you get to 5 reps. And so then that's your score, 5 reps. You know, so week one, you get 5 reps. Maybe it took you about 4 minutes and 30 seconds. You don't have time to get another rep in, you feel. So that kind of leaves what your score is. So week two, you work the same way, do the same kind of warm up, get to that 90%, 95% of max again. And then now you're setting the clock for 5 minutes again. And now you're looking for to get an increase. You're looking to get, you know, maybe a 30 to 50% rep increase. So if you had 5 reps last time, you really want to kind of get to 7 or 8 reps in that 5 minute clock and record your score, and, you know, that's it and you're done. So, and then once, you know, you do this, maybe you do week three, and once you get to a point where you've doubled 5 reps, you know, you get to about 10 reps or you've doubled whatever your first week score was, you're ready to kind of bump up the weight. And it's very, very likely, if you started with 90%, now you can move up to 95%. But if you had started at 95%, It's pretty likely your max is increased, and so it can be worth the time to retest it if you want to recheck that out, or just assume you have beaten that and just, you know, up the weight by 5 to 10%. So that is my favorite approach. It is approach I've used for a while at times to especially to quickly increase a, you know, I want to get a PR up very fast in a certain lift. This has been just a gold standard approach for me. And just kind of, you know, what are the benefits? Why does it work? Well, one thing is going with 90 to 95%, you get very accustomed to heavy loads. And so that's part of the animal. You know, you get, sometimes if you don't max out often, just getting the feel of that bar can be a lot and it can be taxing. With the shortened rest, so this approach gets you really accustomed to heavy loads and the body adapts amazing. Even with shortened rest, so you start getting to a point where you'd only need 30, 35 seconds in between. This is how you can start to get to 9, 10 reps in that 5 minutes. Your body, with the shortened rest, your body actually begins to acclimate much, much faster. You get very used to the heavy weight. And it actually, it's really weird. It's like the third or fourth or fifth rep. It actually starts to feel almost, I want to say easy, but a little bit easier. Your body really gets used to it, and this is really kind of where the magic happens, and you can continue to do these reps within the 5 minutes. And the, you know, 5 minutes is just kind of the number I've always used, just because I don't want to be doing this for 10 minutes. I think that gets too taxing. I've messed around. 3 minutes is kind of short. 7 minutes is kind of long. 5 minutes just feels about right. And it really, with the getting accustomed to heavy loads with the shortened rest period, this becomes kind of a correlated protocol where these two things really work together. and it really allows the ability to get stronger in a faster amount of time. You're speeding up your recovery between reps, and it is my go-to approach. I love it. There's tons of ways to go about getting to new PRs. For me, this is the best approach to doing it. I love it for, fellow wheelers, because once you get that heavy weight on there, you just stay on there. I hate protocols that have you changing the weight every single set, especially when you get into heavy work sets. You're kind of messing around a lot with that crap. This, once you get the weight on there that you're testing against for the 5 minutes, you're just there. You're good to go. You have 5 minutes and, beat your rep count. And I'm never trying to do multi reps in a set. Every set is one rep. That's kind of just get one. Now, I think that's also part of the secret sauce, is you're not overtaxing on a single set. So, even though the rest periods are short, you're banging out that one rep and you're back up there. So your time under tension is very short, under 10 seconds for sure. More like probably 3 to 5 seconds. And it really allows you, even though you might seem crazy to only have a 20 to 30 second rest period, over time, you really, you don't feel like you need to do it more than that. You do that rep, your body is primed and ready to go. You re-rack the bar and you're raring to go again in 20, 30 seconds. It's ideal for, it's great for Olympic lifts, especially for kind of wheeler Olympic lifts, because they aren't going to be an extraordinary amount of weight compared to, some things like deadlifts and squats. So that's it. You set a timer for 5 minutes, work at 90, 95%, beat your score from the week before, move the weight up accordingly. You follow something like this, I guarantee you your PRs are going to be going up. All right, let's get into some football talk. We are in championship week for the NFL. The conference championship games are this week. We have the Packers versus Tampa in the early game. And then after is the Bills at the Chiefs. And first off, I'm just going to talk about my general playoff approach in the year 2021 and how I approach these games when I'm betting on these games. And, in the playoff games, it's the greatest test because, well, for one thing, the issue is the lines are typically pretty tight. But when the stakes are the same for both teams, you have highly motivated teams. One of the biggest challenges in regular season betting is one team has more motivation than the other in almost every single case. A team might be coming off a loss, a couple losses. A team might be fighting off being eliminated from playoff contention. There's a lot of different factors that come in. When you get to the playoffs, it's do or die for both teams. And so you have equal motivation for both teams. So it comes down simply to this for me. In the NFL in 2021, it really is, can you pass or can you not? It is not a ton more complicated than that. To take it kind of a step further, when I try to play a game in my head, which team do you feel has a distinct advantage on a 3rd and 8 to convert? Now, this can also be, does one team you feel is just a much better pass defense than the other team? That can play in it too. But number one, first and foremost, I'm looking at teams. Do one of these teams, if it's 3rd and 8, am I going to feel comfortable with, if I'm betting on or against them, to convert? And what about the other team when they're in the same situation? It can also be, if there's a team that's going to end up committing a penalty or take a sack and be stuck on a second and 17, do I feel like one of these teams is much better than the other at converting that and still be effective and have an effective offense? Because I'll tell you right now, I hate nothing more than being stuck with money bet on a team that is absolutely dead in the water on 2nd and 17 or 3rd and 8, or, then the third scenario kind of, they're down 10-0. I'll get into the games last week, but, I also bring up, is one team much better at defending? So that can mean things like, a superior pass rush or amazing corners and coverage and things like that. I think that's tougher. I think defense is, rating defenses and right now in the league is the most overrated thing that these analytics try to do. I am strongly in the belief that, you can tell whether a defense is basically good, average, or bad. I think you fall in one of the three categories, and there's not much other than that, because so much of defense and stats depend on who you played, the quarterbacks you played, the scenarios you played in, the conditions. Cleveland had a few games this year where they had two or three games this year where the wind and the weather was such a factor that, you know, those scores were so low. Well, does that mean Cleveland's defense is good? No, it's not. It's not very good at all. But basically, yeah, that just is, do you greatly trust one of these teams' passing games over the other? And just look at last week as an example. Going in, I did a four-team parlay on the money line across all four games. I had Green Bay, Buffalo, Kansas City, and Tampa. When you look at the Rams versus the Packers, which team did you trust to be able to convert those situations I bring up? You know, 3rd and 8, 2nd and 17, down by 10. I mean, it's Green Bay all day. I mean, you'll take Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay passing game over Jared Goff and the Rams passing game any day of the week. Bills versus Ravens, that's even an easier one. I mean, I'm in the belief that the Ravens cannot convert a 3rd and 8 if Lamar is not running for it. You just can't live and die on that. It's not going to work. It's just simply not going to work. Kansas City versus Cleveland. I mean, that's Kansas City all day, obviously. Tampa Bay versus New Orleans. This would be, I would say, an edge to Tampa Bay, but not as overwhelming as the other three games. But I definitely would have put the advantage there, Tampa Bay, on that. Just looking at stats and just how I feel and what I've seen this year. Now, just kind of a last little tidbit on this. Now, this is not the end-all be-all. I mean, there are other scenarios, and there's always going to be exceptions to these rules. You know, that's why you have upsets. But the goal is to win more than you lose in betting. And if you follow this approach, I mean, even look at last year and look at teams. You know, like last year, a good example of where this would have broken is, or it wouldn't have broken, you know, Green Bay versus San Francisco last year. I did not have a great trust in the Packers offense last year. I don't think their 13-3 record last year was a complete mirage, but it was a team that capitalized on a lot of opportunities at the right times in the season to get to 13 wins. They beat an okay Seattle team, but they were not on the same level as San Francisco. So even in that game, if I didn't love Jimmy G converting a 3rd and 8 passing against the Packers, I actually would have loved to have seen him to have a couple of those in that game. I thought there was no chance the Packers could convert a 3rd and 8 against that San Francisco defense. I thought any time that it was going to be a longer developing play, San Francisco would have eaten the Packers alive, and they did. They did in that game. They did in the game earlier in the year. So that's kind of where the defense can come into it. So even if you think both teams are about even in their ability to convert a 3rd and 8 in a vacuum, you know, when you look at the matchup, is there a distinct advantage by the defense? And, you know, last year with San Francisco and Green Bay, I definitely think there was that. You know, San Francisco's defense was so good along the front that it made it that, yeah, I trust San Francisco more in that game, specifically in that scenario, just because of the potential domination by the defense. So that's it on that. Let's just move into the game. So first up is Green Bay versus Tampa Bay. I don't know where you get your news for NFL, but if you follow a lot of the ESPNs or national shows, they're going to talk about the first game a lot. I can tell you right now, that first game means nothing. It does not matter. And you would think all these talking heads would use the Tampa Bay, or the evidence that Tampa Bay just beat the Saints, as, you know, proof in that. You know, Saints destroyed Tampa in the second matchup. They beat them in the first one, but that one can be excused as, you know, the first game with Brady and stuff like that. But the second game, I mean, the Saints just dismantled Tampa. And Tampa won last week. So, I mean, that alone kind of just throws that whole thing out the window. But I'll tell you specifically why I believe that game means nothing in this specific matchup. Is in that game, Tampa was coming off of probably their I would say their worst loss of the season, just from a frustrating standpoint. They had lost to Chicago in primetime on Thursday night, and, you know, they were sloppy. The penalties, the pass rush destroyed them. They did not play a very good football game. And the Packers, on the other hand, were coming off a bye, where they had had their ass kissed for 2 weeks. I mean, they had been getting Super Bowl buzz. They had beaten the Saints. I mean, things were looking good for Green Bay. There was a reason they were getting the publicity they did. But they were, I mean, that was a team ripe to get their butt kicked. And Tampa was coming in very motivated, and Tampa whooped them. I mean, they whooped them. Even the Green Bay started out 10-0. I just remember the very first pass play, Rodgers was holding on to the ball, kind of ad-libbing, and I was just like, oh, no, not this again. That's exactly what it looked like. They ended up getting points out of the drive, but it wasn't a clean drive. It was a lot of kind of making things happen. Just, it wasn't the way Green Bay had been playing pretty much the entire season. You know, Green Bay did not have a great plan in that game. Not a lot of motion. They didn't adjust to the blitz, which, and once Todd Bowles started blitzing and it had success, he unleashed the reins and they just destroyed them. And Tampa Bay is an avalanche team. I mean, and that game proved it. When they get things rolling on all cylinders, they can really just, I mean, they are an avalanche team. Everything can kind of come down on you. And it did in that game. Now, advanced stats show us that Green Bay has not been nearly as bad against the blitz all season outside of that game, and especially since that game. And Tampa Bay has not been as effective with their blitz outside of that game. So there's just a lot of things that kind of, I mean, can't throw a game completely out, but in this case, I really do think you can. It's not going to have a bearing, I should say, on this game. If I just don't see it having a bearing in this game. Some things that'll be different. Green Bay, you know, other than those motivational factors I bring up, where Green Bay was feeling a little too good about themselves and Tampa was highly motivated, Green Bay is going to go back to using a ton of motion as they've done for several weeks now, where they're just tearing teams up. And for whatever reason, they just didn't in that week 6 matchup, had very little motion. It was very static offense. That motion essentially forces the defense to declare their coverage, where blitzes might come from, or has to get teams out of blitzes. They're going to use so much motion on every single play that Rodgers is going to have just a ton of information before the snap now. Also, another factor in that game that I think you have to at least talk about if you're really thinking that Tampa is going to repeat that, it's highly, highly unlikely that Tampa is going to be +2 in turnover margin, gets a defensive touchdown, a second turnover that, you know, puts the ball for them at the Green Bay 2, and have zero penalties. I mean, Tampa was the most penalized team coming into that game, and they had zero penalties. In a league where holding can be called every single play, their D-backs are extremely handsy. There was penalties. Let me tell you, there were a lot of penalties. In fact, one of those interceptions, there was a lot of contact. I don't have an issue with not calling flags, but you know, it is what it is. I highly doubt we're going to see a game where one team has 6 to 8 penalties, the other team has zero, and the turnovers. All those things working together is the reason that game turned into a blowout. I don't see all those going in the direction of one team and being the road team in this game. Weather will be a factor. Don't let anybody tell you it won't be. I don't even think it's being talked up enough. I think it's just Tampa Bay cannot simulate the feel of under 20 degrees, and that's what it's going to be like. And there's going to be some probably precipitation with snow. You can't simulate it. There's no way you can. Tampa is, you know, it's approaching 60s and 70s this week, and they're going to go into 20s. It's going to feel a lot different. Brady's arm and colder temps. Now, I listened to Bill Simmons' podcast. He had been complaining for Brady for the last couple of years, especially when the weather turns in New England, that he just didn't think that Brady had the arm strength anymore for colder weather. This is going to be the coldest game he's played in. Probably, I mean, I would love to see where this stands up, but it's probably been a while since Brady has played in a game this cold. I can just tell you, as somebody who lived in Wisconsin for the first 35 years of my life and then moved down to Florida several years ago, the blood thins incredibly fast. I mean, we went back for a Packer game in November that first year I was here. So I was only down in Florida for 6 months, and I was cold to the bone. And it was around 20 some degrees. It's crazy how fast you kind of start to adapt to the warm weather. And that cold feels really damn cold. Now, some of the young guys in Tampa, that might not affect. Brady's 42 years old. He's my age. He's going to feel that. There's no way he won't. Footing. I don't know if this one's being talked up enough. Lambeau is just notorious for having a slippery track. You see it, especially anytime that the Green Bay is in a primetime game, because the moisture comes in on the field a little bit, the dew at night, and it's a slippery track. Green Bay is used to this. They have the right spikes. Tampa is not, and that can be a factor. And if you were to look at these teams up, which team has the pure speed factor advantage? It may be Tampa, especially with those linebackers. And I mean, that's going to slow that down a little bit. It doesn't have to have a huge effect to have a huge impact, I guess is my point. Because if you put these two teams now on even footing as far as just speed, that takes away a big advantage for Tampa. The Packers crowd gave the Packers a boost last week. You could just tell. On the screen, and that's all you heard about from reporters, from beat writers in Green Bay, that the team was very happy to have a crowd back. I expect the same here. So you're going to have a little bit of crowd noise. And, you know, Tampa hasn't had to deal with it a ton. I don't think Washington had any fans in that playoff game. I don't remember if the Saints, you couldn't really hear it. So I don't know if they had fans in there at all or not. But Lambeau was kind of, I mean, they've said it, you know, it was 9,000. It sounded like, could have sounded like 90. I think you're going to see a similar thing here. If you were just take both teams and they both play well, a fairly clean game. So, you know, kind of even in turnover, well, even in turnovers or no turnovers. Let's say there's no turnovers at all. Let's make it easy. And the penalties are fair, you know, across the board. If both teams play a solid game, I like Green Bay. I think they have the proven track record of an effective and efficient offense. Tampa is kind of an all or nothing offense. And so in that case, I like Green Bay to win. If you were to line up the best players in this game, you know, Green Bay, you'd go something with Rodgers, Davante Adams, Aaron Jones, the running back, Jair, and then I think you have to include the safeties in there with Amos and Darnell Savage, the way they've been playing over the second half of the season. With Tampa, you know, on their side, you'd have to go with Brady, Jones, the running back, who's played very well, Evans, Devin White. I think the pass rush for both teams is pretty even. As far as just the guys that are the pure pass rushers. If there was an edge, I'd say slightly to Green Bay just because of how Rashawn Gary has come on at the end of the year, along with the fact that Kenny Clark provides something in the middle of the defense. It's a little bit more than Tampa has coming from the middle. But, I mean, pass rush, I would if there's a box for advantage one team or even, I'd say it's probably close to even. I think the O-lines seem even as well. Again, if there's an edge, I'd go to Green Bay because of the field conditions. They're going to be more used to it, and they know the snap count because you know they're not going to have to deal with the crowd. So I really think the big difference here in this game, it could come down to just how damn good Jair Alexander is. I mean, he is a pit bull out there. Devin White for Tampa is the same, but he's in the middle. I think there's a lot of things the Packers can do scheme-wise to take Devin White out of the game. Jair is going to shut somebody down. If he shuts down Evans and if Antonio Brown is not 100%, now you're down to Godwin. It comes down to a game where it's, you know, Godwin and Gronk versus the safeties and Kevin King. I mean, I might like Tampa in that aspect. But I think in stars wise, I think the edge would go a little bit to Green Bay because I think Jair is going to be able to take Evans out of the game. And I don't think Tampa has anybody that's going to be able to take Adams out of the game if the Packers are willing to move him around. So Tampa can win this game, no doubt. I mean, they absolutely can win this game. But I feel like they have to win the turnover battle to get there. If they don't get turnovers versus the Saints, they're not winning that game. If you even just take two of the turnovers away in that game, I don't think they win the game. They're not playing Drew Brees, and they're not playing that Heineke kid from Washington. They're playing Aaron Rodgers, who's in the middle of an MVP season, who – has never gotten an NFC Championship game at home. Now that does put a lot of pressure on Rodgers, but I don't think Rodgers is the type of guy that views it that way. I kind of feel like in Rodgers' head, all this is gravy at this point, since so many people thought he was done. MVP season, it just feels like it's Green Bay season. Tampa Bay is a bully team similar to Baltimore, and this is getting back to kind of some of their defensive stats. When they beat teams, they beat the living crap out of teams, and so it improves some of their analytic numbers to make these teams look closer than they are. Green Bay their defense coordinator, he goes soft coverage the second he can. I mean, if you give Mike Patton the opportunity to play 10 yards off in zone, he's going to do it. And in a lot of the Packer games where they got up three scores, he would go to a super soft defense. And the Packers, you know, kind of – they didn't really let teams back in the game where they had a chance, but it made a lot of games – about a touchdown closer than it should be. Tampa does not do that. Tampa gets up. They are going to, they definitely put their foot on your throat. And really all I'm talking about at that point is how some of the analytics can make this game look closer than I feel it is. Packers are favored by around 3 points. I guess I don't see this Tampa team being better than the Rams. And that game was a 7-point line. This game could have been a 6-point line. It would have made perfect sense to me. So I like Green Bay. I am a Packers fan, though. But I was also a Packers fan last year, and I thought they had no chance against San Francisco without being the team that needed probably three turnovers to win. That was really the only way I thought Green Bay could win last year against San Francisco is if we got probably at least two turnovers, maybe three. All right, next up, Buffalo and Kansas City. The Mahomes injury is going to be a big part of this, and every show is going to be talking about that all week. I don't want to get into that too much because, you know, just it's just kind of an unknown. But as I get to the end of this pick, I will factor that in a little bit. Let's talk about the Bills first. The one thing I love about the Bills is they've had an extremely difficult path to get here. Now, that doesn't always guarantee you're going to go, but it means they are battle-tested. They're going to be a team that is going to be able to take on what Kansas City can possibly throw at them and not flinch. You could argue that, you know, in round one, the Indianapolis Colts were the best team to lose in round one. You could argue that the best team to lose in round two was Baltimore. Well, the Bills are the team to knock out both of those teams. That is an incredibly difficult path. I got to tell you, Indy would have been a team, if I were one of the favorites in the AFC, that I would want nothing to do with, especially early in the playoffs. I mean, once you get to the AFC Championship game, it's, you know, whoever's left you're playing, let's go. But before that, when you can kind of pick and choose who you might want to play and when you play them, Indy was just a team I wouldn't want to play. Mostly because they are going to be able to move the ball, and they're going to do it in a deliberate way, death of a thousand paper cuts. It's very hard to stop. If you have a quarterback that's willing to take three yard checkdowns to the running back, and the running back runs for 2 yards after that, teams that are willing to do that all day are just very annoying to play. And the Colts have a running game. The Colts are well coached on defense. They're not going to beat themselves. They're not going to throw a 101-yard interception return, which is really how the Bills ended up putting that game away. But my pro Bills argument on that is they survived. They survived a game against Baltimore where the wind was terrible, and Baltimore's a good running team. I mean, that was going to be the recipe for the Bills to lose, and they survived. I think you got to give them bonus points for that. Now, KC also had to survive. Cleveland has to be kicking themselves, because if they don't do that fumble at the goal line at the end of the first half, you just flip that play, they might win the game. But I think Cleveland lost this game, not KC won this game. And I'll tell you what I mean. Once Mahomes went out, Cleveland should have been doing everything they can to speed that game up. When you become the clear favorite in the game, you want as many plays as possible, because the more plays, the better it is for you. Cleveland went to the exact opposite approach. They should have went completely aggressive, maybe even going no huddle once Mahomes went out, so you guaranteed you got as many plays as possible in the time remaining. Cleveland didn't. Cleveland went more conservative. And you know what? They deserved to lose. Their play calling, I mean, the moment just got too big for them. They got way too conservative. Even I don't have a problem with them punting, because it was 3rd and 9, but the play calling that led to that 3rd and 9, I hated. I just hated all of it. It was, how many times can you throw a pass to the behind the line of scrimmage? How many times can you do that in one game? Apparently Cleveland wanted to set a record for it. I hate that. It's one thing to take checkdowns. It's another thing when you're clearly behind in a game and you need points. You need to start pushing the ball at least to the 7 to 12 yard window downfield, and they didn't do it at all. Indy, I said, gave them points for playing that style. The problem is that's Indy style all the time, and Indy was playing with a lead most of the time in that game. So Cleveland was not. Cleveland was down the entire game and still stuck with a strategy of these running back dump off plays and screens that just weren't working. It was a waste of playing. Baker was playing well enough to earn the right to be able to throw the ball downfield. I hated everything the way Cleveland ran that game in the fourth quarter. Now, Mahomes cannot be 100%. There's no way. Let's ignore the concussion. He was clearly hobbled to a degree where he could not scramble in that game. He just wasn't, and I don't see how he's going to be 100%. That's a factor. The Chiefs have not covered a spread in 10 weeks. 10 weeks. Does that sound like these were 25 point spreads? I mean, a lot of these were spreads between 3 and 7 points. Not a ton of them in double digits. I mean, they have not covered in 10 weeks. I feel like the Chiefs are begging us to see the writing on the wall that this team is just not quite as good as everybody thinks they are. I think that Kansas City is still probably the best pure team in the league, but the gap is so much closer than everyone realizes. And being the defending champion, every opponent is going to be more motivated, so they're at a disadvantage. And I just feel like Kansas City is begging us to see the writing on the wall. I think that the Bills, I think they have a more flexible defensive scheme with McDermott as the coach and Leslie Frazier as the DC. They made adjustments in that Baltimore game and pretty much shut down the Baltimore run. I feel like if one of these two defenses is going to make some adjustments that are game-changing, it's going to be the Bills and not the Chiefs. I think there's a good chance the Bills come out and have that all systems go game. They were behind the eight ball in that entire Colts game because of the way the Colts dominated the field position and just dominated the clock, dominated everything as far as putting the Bills in a tough chance. And the Bills still found a way to win that game. Last week with the weather and playing a running team, again, the Bills want to get out and run and go. I mean, it's like I look at the Bills as almost like a run and gun basketball team. And they haven't been able to run a fast break now in a couple weeks. And the Chiefs are going to be more than happy to play that style. The Bills might be better at it in certain ways, not in all ways, but in certain ways, the Bills are ready to spread it out and fire it around. And I think they could just have that really great all around game. KC definitely will make some magic happen if you play in that spread style, obviously, but I think Mahomes' inability to scramble will be the difference. Because Allen is going to be able to run and is an effective and downright scary runner when he's coming downhill. And they go four wide or five wide, and they have Allen as the runner, essentially, on, even if it's designed runs or non-designed runs. Stopping him for less than 8 yards is very difficult. I got to tell you, I'm feeling the Bills. I like the Bills this week. I just think things line up for the Bills in this game, Mahomes being a little bit nicked up. The Chiefs just continually kind of playing with fire a little bit, and I think it gets them. So I think we'll be seeing a Packers versus Bills Super Bowl. That's what I'm going with, and hopefully at least I'm definitely right on the first one as a Packer fan, but enjoy the games. All right, that will do it for episode 31. Thanks for listening. You can hit me up at Instagram, at WheelchairFit. We're available on Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks again.